We're going to call to order the meeting of the Senate Committee on Rural Communities and Economic Development. Today is March 12, 2013. We have two bills up, both of which are scheduled for public hearings today. And we're going to switch the order a little bit. We're going to do Senate Bill 719 first. There's only a few people who want to testify. The other one has a few more. And we'll see if, as time goes on, if we need to limit testimony in the second one. We will let the first two panels talk what they need to do, and then we'll go and see if we need to after that to get through. We have a couple hours, so we'll see how much we can get done. And with that, we're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 719. Mm-hmm. We'll have a short explanation by our administrator, and we'll bring Reed Anderson, John Fine, and Senator Winsett up to the dais as well. They're giving a short explanation. Senator Winsett will be first.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 719 redefines the basis for the Oregon Sheep Commission assessment. It limits the assessment to an undetermined minimum amount, but not to exceed $1 per head. It authorizes the commission to levy the assessment on any sheep produced and sold in the state, regardless of the sheep's disposition, and it includes casual sales.
Senator Whitson.
Thank you, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Senator Doug Whitsett, representing District 28. Mr. Chair, the Oregon Sheep Commission currently assesses Oregon sheep growers 3 cents per pound on all wool sold through commercial channels. The commission uses the proceeds of the assessments to promote the production and sale of sheep products for Oregon sheep growers. Senate Bill 719 changes that assessment by creating authority to prospectively assess up to $1 per head on any sheep produced and sold in Oregon. The bill will also delete the Commission's authority to assess the sale of wool when the new by-the-head assessment is in place or within 90 days. The Commission is asking for this change because over the years, the primary products sold by sheep producers have shifted from wool to meat to lamb. The sale of wool has become more sporadic, and the prices received are relatively unstable. Oftentimes, the prices on wool are so poor that the producers will store it for a year or two until the price comes back up. So the commission believes that sheep sold by the head are a much more stable source of revenue to pay for their promotional activities for the sheep growers of Oregon. It is the intention of the commission to establish the new by-the-head assessment to achieve relative parity between what they're receiving from the wool assessment now and the meat assessment later. It isn't meant to be a major increase in revenue. It's designed to stabilize and make more consistent that revenue so that they can plan their budgets better. Pretty simple bill. I don't know of any opposition. So I do ask that you approve the bill.
Thank you. And do you have time to stay? We'll
sure.
Ask the two, and then we'll have questions for the whole panel. So whichever wants to go next. And make sure you announce yourself at the beginning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is John Fine. I'm presently the chairman of the Oregon Sheep Commission and also the president of the Oregon Sheep Growers Association. And we are here in hope that the committee and the legislature will pass this bill so that we can make this change into the Oregon Sheep Commission. This particular proposal has been discussed at least for 5 years, and we've within the membership of the Oregon Sheep Growers Association, we've discussed it at our convention. We've sent out information to the newsletter that goes to all sheep producers in the state, and we have not received any opposition or any reservations about it. Our assessments on wool have gone from about $9,000 per year to a high of $29,000 per year. This fluctuation in the income from the assessment on wool makes it very, very difficult for the commission to plan a budget or to even make some kind of a reasonable budget on a yearly basis, and also to provide any type of programs that cover more than 1 year, because we have no idea what the assessment will be. By the switch from wool to meat, we will follow right along with the National Lamb Board checkoff, which is on meat, It will provide us a consistent budget for our promotion, education, and research activities. And because the program is already set up on the national level, we believe that it will make the collection of this particular assessment much more efficient, because it's going to go through the same channels as the national program. If you have any questions, I'll be glad to try to answer them.
Okay. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Reed Anderson. I'm a sheep producer and from Brownsville, Oregon, and also have a small distribution company where we process our own lamb, our own products under Anderson Ranch's Oregon Lamb. I'm also a member of the national organization, the American Sheep Board. So we're the administrators of the dollars that are collected nationally, like John talked about. I'm also here in support of this change, just because of the cash flow issues that John has talked about. I'm on the national board as what they'd call a first handler, which means that I am a processor as well, and that's kind of where the buck stops, so to speak. And the national program has worked very, very well in their collection processes, and we just felt like this would be a good time for us to kind of mirror that pattern. I might want to mention that with the American Lamb Board, we're always looking for matching funds to do any promotions around the nation. And the problem here we have with Oregon is we never know how many funds that we're going to have. So,
any questions for this time? Yes, Senator Close.
Just a clarification, Mr. Chair. Reed, if you have 100,000 sheep, you're not going to pay $100,000. You're going to pay a portion of that. Is that correct?
Well, I don't know that we have a set price. And I think we talked about with a price of 50 cents a head. But, you know, here's the way I feel about it. I feel strongly enough about promotion. It wouldn't bother me to pay $100,000. You know, I'm on the American Lamb Board. It's just been implemented, I think, since 2004, and I've really seen the effects of what promotion does, and especially now when we're in everyone wants to talk about local and grass-fed and all these new buzzwords in marketing. I think in Oregon now we have a real opportunity to try to get our dollars put together and focus on those kinds of activities.
Follow-up, yes.
So there would be no cap, that's what you're saying?
No, I think we have a dollar head cap. Okay. I think that's what that dollar is.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Other questions? Yes. Senator Barger.
Thank you, Chairman Roble. What is the current wool price, coarse wool, West Side, about?
I can tell you that I have some in sitting in a warehouse in Utah. It's been sitting there a year. And I haven't sold it because I haven't had a buyer at any price.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further questions for the panel? I just want to say I appreciate you both of your willingness to serve on these boards and commissions, whether it's at the national level or the state level. It takes local people to make a difference in these commissions in our state, and we appreciate that a lot. When you are the people coming and bringing us and putting this assessment on yourself, it makes it much easier for us to look at this and say this must be a program that we need to figure out how to make it work for you guys. And I appreciate you taking your time today to be here, because a farmer's business is work is never done. And so when you're not here, somebody else is out there doing your work. So, yeah.
Senator Roble, in the section of the page 2 of the bill, there were some blanks in there. And the Oregon Sheep Growers Association has voted to support a maximum of a dollar, but beginning at 50 cents. That's as the elected representative of the sheep growers in Oregon, that's what I can tell you, and that it not be more than 10 cents per head. Those are the two blanks that are in there. If that would help the committee out in any way, That has been, and that is also the information that we provided through the newsletter, letting them know what the vote was at our annual convention.
I appreciate that information. We'll look at that and see if we put something in. Yes, Senator Baker.
So, so it's kind of like the beef checkoff program by the head. So that's going to cover lambs and cull sheep too?
Any yes, meat.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your time.
Yep. We're going to close our hearing on Senate Bill 719. And we'll make sure that we get those numbers filled out. Does that have a subsequent referral to revenue or anything out of the bill? So we probably just have to go to Ways and Means. I'll have to look at that. I'll look at that and see, and then make a decision when we get the numbers in. Okay. Thank you. So with that, we are now going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 633. And I'm going to ask Senator Hensel and whoever you want to bring up with you this first group for a little explanation. And then we have some other senators in the room, and so we will have them following. So.
Chair Roblin, Vice Chair Bertschager, and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bill Hansel. I'm a state senator representing District 29, which includes Wallowa, Union, Umatilla, Morrow, Gillam, Sherman, and parts of Wasco County. I'm here today regarding the bill before you, Senate Bill 633. Previous to my service here in Salem as a state senator, I had the distinct honor of being a Umatilla County Commissioner for 30 years. In addition to this role, I also had the unique opportunity to serve as president of the Oregon the Association of Oregon Counties and president of the National Association of Counties. Having served in these capacities, I am not an individual many would expect to be the chief sponsor of a bill such as this. Though I am an ardent supporter of local government, I believe strongly this bill is important and necessary to ensure decisions relating to GMOs are made on the state and federal levels where there is both the workforce, personnel, and science to substantiate future regulations. As a county commissioner, the biggest challenge I faced was the county budget. How do we find the basic mandated services with the resources provided? Without question, I believe this is the single biggest and most important challenge county commissioners face. So when I foresee a situation which has the potential to all but bankrupt a county, I am compelled to act, hence Senate Bill 633. Our system of government has three levels, local, state, and federal, for a reason. One of the reasons is to match the level of regulation with the level of significance. The courts have already opined that issues of statewide significance should be regulated at the state level. This is the premise, basic premise of Senate Bill 633. The regulation of GMOs should be at the state and federal levels where the expertise and resources reside. To illustrate, I hold in my hand an actual sample of the documentation federal government requires a company such as Monsanto to complete in order for a GMO to be considered for federal safety standards and regulations. I do not believe any county ordinance, regardless how it came to be, will ever trump federal rules, regulations, and oversight, nor do I believe they possess the human resources to go through such cumbersome paperwork and regulations. Senate Bill 633 places this regulation at the state level, preempting local governments. This will have the potential of saving county taxpayers tens of thousands of dollars in litigation expenses defending county-made laws they cannot win. Local ordinances have serious potential to put our counties in a precarious situation where such litigation will come forth whether they enforce the laws or not. House the regulations where it belongs at the state level, not 36 different counties. Please move forward on Senate Bill 633. And I've asked John DiLorenzo if he might explain the bill, and we have a dash one amendment as well, if he could go ahead and present.
Yeah, well, I'll We want to go with John first. Okay. John, go ahead.
Well, Senator John DiLorenzo, on behalf of Oregonians for Food and Shelter, I can't help but notice that I am now flanked by Senator Cruz, and at my back is the Ways and Means co-chair and Senator Bates, and so I am more than happy to defer to them if they have other things to do, unless they'd like to hear our explanation first.
You're okay for the explanation.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is John DiLorenzo. I'm a partner of the firm of Davis Wright Tremaine, and I'm here on behalf of my longtime client, Oregonians for Food and Shelter, to testify in favor of Senate Bill 633, to propose a further amendment, the Dash 1 amendment to the bill, and to give my best explanation as to why you should not adopt the Dash 2 amendment. Senate Bill 633 makes a legislative finding and a declaration that the regulation of agricultural seed, flower seed, vegetable seed, and products of those seeds are matters of statewide concern and should not be subject to a patchwork of local regulations. In particular, Section 3 of the bill prohibits local governments from enacting or enforcing measures, including ordinances, regulations, control areas, or quarantine areas that either inhibit or prevent the production or use of these types of seeds or their products. It contemplates that regulation, if any, would be applicable on a statewide basis, not a local county by county or local government by local government basis. Now, of course, one of the reasons for a local preemption bill is to avoid the possibility of multiple local regulations. My client is of the view that such regulations, which begin and end at county lines, are not in the best interests of the state's agricultural industry and threaten to ultimately require farmers to subject their farming operations to a multiplicity of rules, many of which may be inconsistent with one another on a county-by-county, local-government-by-local-government basis. But there is another reason why Senate Bill 633 and the Dash 1 Amendment should be enacted, and why the Dash 2 Amendment in particular should not. Oregon's Right to Farm and Forest Act, which is found in ORS 30.930-947, was enacted 20 years ago to address the expansion of residential and urban uses into rural areas, which created conflict with farm and forest practices. Now, Paulette Pyle and I were among the proponents of that legislation in the 1993 legislature 20 years ago. We recognized, and the members of the legislature then recognized, that these conflicts sometimes rose above mere angry arguments to a higher level of confrontation and literally threatened the peace in some areas of the state. The Right to Farm and Forest Act has helped to balance these sometimes conflicting uses. The Act defines farming practice as a mode of operation on a farm that may be used on a farm of a similar nature, is a generally accepted, reasonable, and prudent method for the operation of the farm to obtain a profit and money, that may become generally accepted in conjunction with farm use and complies with applicable laws and is done in a reasonable and prudent manner. Forest practices have a very similar definition under the Act. Our current law prohibits local governments from enforcing any ordinance that makes a farm practice a nuisance or a trespass or provides for its abatement and renders those ordinances invalid. Now, as you are aware, there is currently an effort in Jackson County to enact, by initiative, an ordinance that would ban the propagation, cultivation, raising, or growing of certain plants in Jackson County. And that, of course, is the subject of the Dash 2 Amendment. The proposed ordinance itself suggests that the purpose is to minimize impacts on urban citizen gardeners and organic farmers who wish to avoid pollen drift. Now, I believe the practices which this proposed ordinance seeks to prohibit meet the statutory definition of a farming practice because they are modes of operation on a farm. They are used generally in John Jackson County farms. They are generally accepted, reasonable, and prudent methods in connection with farm use. They comply with applicable state and federal laws, and they are done in a reasonable and prudent manner. I have no doubt that if the proposed Jackson County ordinance or similar ordinances are adopted, the Right to Farm and Forest Act could be used to invalidate them. However, doing so would result in protracted litigation. The Right to Farm and Forest Act contains a very strong attorney fee provision in ORS 30.938. There are two courts of appeals cases which have interpreted the Act, and they have made it clear that any party who asserts that he or she is engaging in a farming or forest practice shall, upon prevailing, automatically be entitled to a judgment for his or her reasonable attorney's fees and costs at trial and on appeal. And so, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, if unimpeded, the proliferation of local ordinances like that which is currently proposed in Jackson County would not only subject the counties and local governments to significant defense costs, as they would then be compelled to defend the challenges since these would be ordinances adopted by their voters, it would also make them ultimately liable for the attorney's fees of the farmers who are challenging the validity of the ordinances. We respectfully submit that these are costs which local governments in agricultural areas can hardly afford. Should SB 633 be enacted, there will be no question that these types of local ordinances are invalid from the very beginning and preempted, and that the counties would then have no obligations to enforce them to begin with, which would mean there would be no lawsuits filed against the counties. A local government, absent 633, a local government whose voters approve a prospective ordinance like the Jackson County ordinance would have no choice but to attempt to enforce them, only to be rebuffed by farmers who are the subject of the enforcement and then be liable for the farmers' attorney's fees. So we therefore feel that the enactment of 633 will be of great benefit to the counties who are also struggling with their own budgets. Now, my client is seeking to propose the Dash 1 amendment for a couple purposes. It was printed as, in essence, a restatement of Senate Bill 633. So you can just read it as a substitute for 633, but it does a couple things. First, it creates a definition of nursery seed because there is no such definition in the code. Secondly, it also extends the protections to nurseries besides agricultural seeds. And third, we determined that the word measure was a term of art defined in the election code, and a measure is a law first submitted to the people for their approval or rejection. We were therefore concerned that as printed, it would only preempt local ordinances which were first submitted to voters. The Dash 1 amendment makes it clear that it applies to local laws and measures. So this would also apply to a circumstance in which the governing body on its own decided to adopt a local law. I'd be happy to take you through the Dash 1 amendment if you need any further explanation, but that's basically the purpose of the amendment. They're contained in the Dash 1. I want to thank you for devoting the time to address Senate Bill 633 and for your consideration of our arguments. We feel this is a process bill. It does not make a rule regarding any particular farming practices, but it provides that there should be but one state rule enforced in each county. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Senator Cruz.
Thank you. For the record, Jeff Cruz, Senate District 1. And also for the record, I'm a farmer. And, for example, on my farm, we raise probably 60 different crops. And the whole GMO thing has, I think it, there's a lot of misunderstanding in the world about what it really is. And I will submit to you, of those 60 crops I raise, every single one of them has been modified at some point in time. That is just the nature of the beast. And I would suggest, if you want to go back to what sweet corn tasted like 40 years ago, it tastes a whole lot better now. And that's because of the fact that we have modified them by cross-pollinating with different strains to get something that's better. That's, you know, so we need to separate those issues from these other ones. But I would also submit, if we the Department of Ag in and of itself is going to struggle to have the expertise to really do the due diligence that the feds are and to go through that whole pile of stuff, and to assume that any county is going to have that level of expertise, I think is putting an undue burden on the counties. But I also want to go to a couple other points. Of all the crops that I raise, there are times when I will take a load of sweet corn to a market out on River Road, either Lone Pine or Thistledown, because they have a shortage. And if Douglas County has one set of standards and Lane County has another set of standards, how do I know that I'm complying with it? And I'm glad that you have put nursery seeds in here because, for example, we have, on my farm, been unable to do a very good job of propagating seedless watermelon seeds. And so what we end up doing is buying those already planted from a nursery. And how do I know that what goes on in that county will fit in the county I'm in? To have the potential of 36 different standards in the state of Oregon is going to make it overly complicated for simple country folk like me that are just trying to farm. And so to have a statewide standard, I think, is the appropriate way to go. We can do the due diligence that's necessary to make sure, because at the end of the day, we're complying with federal regs. Okay, that is where the standards are set, and I just think the best way to do this, and Ms. Chair, this is somebody who believes in local control, and I absolutely do, but on something of this technical level, I think it's appropriate that we task the State Department of Agriculture to make standards that are understandable and apply to everybody.
Any questions for this panel? Senator Przanski.
Just one question that maybe for Johnson, sees the one with talking about the bills. Senator Hansel said that, and you've mentioned GMOs, this actually applies to any type of seed. From my reading of this, there's mm-hmm. not a limitation to genetic modified, but heritage seeds or anything. Is that correct? I take the nod as a yes.
The answer is yes.
Yeah, thanks. Other questions from this panel? Seeing none, I thank you all for being here. And Senator Bates and Representative Buckley, and if you have anybody else you want to come up this time.
Be quick, Mr. Chair.
Okay. You have as much time as you need. We'll limit everybody else in the room. You guys each get your own panel. After that, we're going to figure out how much time we have and figure out what to do.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and committee members. For the record, Alan Bates, State Senator from, of all places, Jackson County. Now, you will hear a lot more about our issue in Jackson County from others in the room after us. I'm going to hit some high spots for you, and then the others will come in and give you more information. So at least I expect they will. Jackson County is a unique area in many, many ways, and quite different from the rest of the state in many ways, too, and not just from the people who live there. The actual geography is different. We are very isolated by mountains on all four sides with a river running through it, the Rogue River and Rogue River Basin. So when we talk about separating ourselves from the state as far as GMO is concerned, this is not just a boundary written across flat lands that nobody can see from one side or the other is there. This is an actual geographic area that's different. It's unique, and it has people that feel very differently about GMOs than the rest of the state might or might not. So that's the first issue. The second issue is we have a large number of organic farmers in the Rogue River Basin area, and they cannot sell their products if they're contaminated with GMO. They can't do it. One of our largest employers there is Annie's Kitchen, which is a large operation, employs a couple hundred people. It's going to add another couple shifts on. It's getting ready to enlarge the plant in North Carolina also. They sell only organic food. They get some of their product from our local valley, some from other parts of the state, and some from California where they have banned GMO. And they can't use GMO food and sell their product across the United States. We are concerned what this will do to our valley from the point of view of losing those markets and putting these people out of business. You'll have before you probably over 250 different businesses in the valley that do not want this to happen. That's why we have a ballot measure to try to block it from coming in. I've heard from previous testimony concerns about lawsuits involved in this. I didn't hear anything about it being constitutional. It's not constitutional. Those laws can be changed and exceptions can be made. We've seen that before. I find it especially interesting that my colleagues from the Republican Party suddenly like the federal government and the state government. I was kind of stunned to hear that. So I guess when it serves your purposes, you like them, and when it don't serve your purposes, you don't. This is a broad question, a complex one. I don't pretend to know all the science on it. I've read about it for the last 15 years and tried to consider in an open way what some of these things might mean for us long term, and I really don't know that the science is clear at this time on either direction. But I do know this. I took an oath 40 years ago to first do no harm, and I'm not convinced this doesn't do us harm. I think as a minimum, we should carve out one or two or three counties and say, if you're isolated geographically where you can't have wind drift, where you could have some control, this would be a great way to start looking at this. And Jackson County is ideally suited for doing that. You can see what happens to non-GMO foods compared to others. And I think it's the way to have a bill go through here we can have some consensus on. Whether you agree with that or not, I don't know. But I hope you would consider the dash twos. And if there is a problem on the dash twos with other law in this state, we would be glad to go forward, go down to legislative council, and offer amendments that would cover those sections also. Peter.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative Peter Buckley representing South Jackson County in the legislature. I'm proud to be here with my state senator on behalf of the people of Jackson County. I'll speak quick, Mr. Chair, because I usually do, and we have many people who would like to testify on this who've come all the way up to testify on this bill. It's very, very important to people in our county. Senator Bates did say it very, very clearly. Organic farming is huge in Jackson County. 92 organic farmers have asked us to come forward to make sure that they have the right to have their voices heard on the ballot in Jackson County. They have helped organize a citizen initiative drive, which is being done the way that we all say we want it done. Citizens who look at the future of their region and say, we want our future to be a specific way. They gather support, they organize, they get the signatures, and they put on the ballot a measure that says this will be the future of our valley. Jackson County will have an organic future. We'll market that, we'll brand it, and we'll profit by it, and we'll thrive by it. I want to do just a couple things, Mr. Chair. I'd like to read quickly a definition of a genetically modified organism, because, again, there's some confusion over what a GMO is compared to what a hybrid crop might be. A genetically modified organism is a man-made, patented organism created in a laboratory through genetic engineering. It's created when a gene from a totally unrelated species is shot into the genetic material of another species. That's what we're talking about, Mr. Chair. That's why 30 countries have banned or proposed to ban GMOs, including many European countries. In the United States, Gerber and Heinz baby foods, Frito-Lay, IAM's pet foods, Trader Joe's, and even McDonald's and Burger King are now refusing GMO corn, potatoes, and other ingredients. These are the products that we're talking about. These are the products that Jackson County wants to be known as being the absolute alternative of. We want to be known as a haven for organic products, our farm-to-school program, our farmers markets program, and our exports throughout the rest of the state and the country. And a couple other points I'd like to make very quickly. The arguments made that this is some sort of unusual thing that a county would say that they would like the right to ban GMOs. Mr. Chair and members, in 2004, Mendocino County in California banned GMOs. It was quickly followed by Trinity County and another county that slips my mind right now. Marin County. Those counties have been able to ban GMOs without undergoing the travails that the previous panel basically rose the alarm on. 2004, Mendocino County. So 9 years ago, that ban was passed. The agricultural industry in California did not collapse. The courts were not filled relentlessly with court cases on this. Farmers were not damaged in Mendocino County. In fact, Mendocino County, Marin, and Trinity County still strongly support that ban and are marketing their products to Amy's Kitchen in Medford, so their products can be used in distribution of Amy's Kitchen's goods. Two other points I'd make. One is the right to farm. Members, I would submit you do not have a right to farm in a way that damages the crop of another farmer. And GMO has that potential in the Rogue Valley. I'm asking for your support to allow us to vote for our own future on that. In addition, I think the previous panel assumed victory in court for Monsanto and others who have battled, not only in this country, but around the world, farmers who wish to farm in more traditional ways or in organic farming. And I don't think you can make that assumption. In fact, there's a case in the Supreme Court right now with farmers back east who are challenging Monsanto. all around the world, all across our country, and in counties in many different states, people are moving forward to say they want a different future. And all we're asking members is allow us to make that decision in Jackson County for a future that's going to benefit the organic farming industry and benefit our communities. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Sorry, Mr. Chair. Any questions for this panel? Yes.
So I got the other half of Jackson County, which I don't know. I understand the organic farmer and absolutely in favor of people having that position, but I think maybe we're having a little more concern over than we have to. I also wonder about what are we going to do with all the private people that have gardens? Most of the seeds they're buying for those gardens, they're not heirloom seeds. So are we going to ban that for everybody that has a garden in Jackson County that they can't go down to the co-op or somewhere else and buy those seeds and plant them in their garden? Is that bill going to affect all the private gardeners in the counties?
Mr. Chair.
And what is to separate a line of a county from one county? So if this county agrees to ban it and the other county doesn't, you know, the wind doesn't stop at the border of that county. So there's some concerns there.
Mr. Chair, yes, you can have areas in between that are buffer zones, and especially in a county like ours where there are natural barriers to start with. The area you'd have to have for a border line that would be not easily passed over is very narrow along the river from between Josephine and Jackson counties. It wouldn't be a major job to do that. I think it would affect people, but to be honest, in my opinion, it would affect people in their private gardens. They would have to have some idea that this could be affecting crops in the valley. I think people have a right to make that decision locally and to enforce it locally. I think it's much better to handle it that way than at the state level. I've always voted for local control. I will continue to vote for local control. I like to be consistent, with the exception of such things as highways and cell phones and laws that when you're passing from county to county that are really obvious. This is not really obvious. This is really a local issue. I believe it should stay a local issue. I think Representative Buckley put it extremely well when you heard what he said. There's no reason to force this on the whole state. To open the state up to Monsanto, basically what you're asking us to do, just open it up to them. You know, the Agriculture Department does not have the money to really look at this. Probably doesn't have the expertise yet either. It'll be years before they do. We're basically being asked by a big agricultural firm to open the state up, and I'm not ready to do that right now.
Further questions for this panel? Okay. I appreciate both of you taking the time because I know how busy you are because we know how busy we are. So thank you very much for being here.
Thank you, members.
We have a fairly large list of people, so we're going to try to keep people. We counted the time, and we think if people can hold it to about 4 minutes, we probably can get through it in our hour and 50 minutes that's left. And we do have a member that's willing to stay a little longer after some of us leave to take some testimony. So I think we're in pretty good shape. So with that, we're going to try to go back and forth, and many of you came from a long ways away, so I appreciate that, and we try to honor that as part of our process. So, Joel Akinisi, I guess, hopefully I got that right, Bob Krause, and Tim Wynn, if you want to come up first, I would appreciate it. And while they're getting up there, I will tell you, we received a lot of mail about this bill, and we have a program called OLIS, which puts all that, and where our staff is trying to get all that in for all of us to look at as well. And as you know, hearing today, so there'll be time afterwards for us to have a chance to look at all that, too. So, yes. And whoever wants to start in your group.
I'll go ahead.
Okay. Actually, and be sure to mention who you are. So thanks.
I'm going to do that right now.
That's good.
And I hope I don't get any of your names wrong. It's no Okunze. And I'm Joel Okunze, and I'm ready to pass SB 633. I would like to first of all thank you, Mr. Chairman, and the committee members for the opportunity to be heard. I first located, briefly about myself, I located in Jackson County in 1980, and I've been in the private business sector for my entire career. I'm a licensed real estate broker, and I specialize in rural lands, farm, and ranch. I'm in a second appointed term as a Jackson County Planning Commissioner, and I take great care to make the reasoned decisions based upon the best presented facts and evidence. I have also recently been appointed to the Technical Advisory Committee for the Governor's Executive Order EO-1207 Pilot Plan to review local land uses for the southern three counties, Jackson, Josephine, and Douglas County. I'm a member of the Jackson County Medford Chamber of Commerce Natural Resource Committee. I'm a member of the Business Recruitment Committee for SoReady, Southern Oregon Regional Economic Development. And lastly, I'm also a member of both the Oregon Farm Bureau and the Jackson County Stockman's Chapter of the Oregon Cattlemen's Association. In addition, I raise a small select herd of grass-fed purebred Angus beef, and I have a beginning business development in the production of worm castings for natural soil amendment products and fishing bait. I'm a strong advocate, probably I don't think there's anybody in this room that's a stronger advocate for local control and land use issues in Jackson County. Because we have a different set and subset of soil profiles, terrain features, forested lands, and public and private land ratios that many counties, particularly to the north, don't have. In Jackson County, we have mandated for our ordinances to not be more restrictive than any state-imposed land use requirement. In fact, we even contracted an outside consultant to review our LDO and advise us to make sure that we have no conflicts on the LDO to accommodate that mandate. This proposed ballot measure 15-119 would require the implementation of a new ordinance which, in my opinion, would violate this mandate. It would require the implementation of an 11-page ordinance chapter 635 drafted and proposed by the measure proponents, which was not presented by staff, nor to the Planning Commission, who has not had an opportunity to review it for recommendation to the Board of Commissioners. Additionally, state, federal, international approvals would be artificially denied to many Jackson County traditional farmers. It would deny right to farm laws that should not be impinged upon that protect all farmers, including those voicing opposition to GE cultivation. It would impede benefits on three axes, and that is the competitive cultivation practices with economies of scale, improved crop resistance to insects, and enhanced production capabilities per acre planted. To my knowledge, there is no consensus science that GE is detrimental, and it is positional in a science practice for generations and has provided for feeding millions throughout the centuries across the globe. It would be unfortunate to see the complexity of the particulars translate into obscurity of the facts, with the result being increased bureaucracy impeding legitimate agricultural practices. The solution is always in the details and not in the fears, and I urge the committee to pass SB 633. There is nothing more pure or respectable than the attempt to earn profit from toiling in the fields. And if many of you saw the Super Bowl recently, so God made a farmer, no one could describe it better or in more endearing terms than the late Paul Harvey did in that narrative in that commercial. It was spectacular. And these are folks that who from dawn till dusk, 7 days a week, rain or no rain, wind, weather, and storm, good markets and bad, Oregon farmers and ranchers brave the fates and help feed the world.
Thanks.
Through the course of time, innovative technologies have been born of need, and they have resulted in abundance. And I hope that you pass SB 633, and I appreciate your interest and thoughtfulness. Yeah.
Thank you for your comments, and we'll go to the next, and we'll have questions for all the panelists at the end. Yes.
My name is Tim Wynn. I am a farmer operator from Corvallis, Oregon, Benton County. Thank you for letting me testify today. Once again, I am a farmer who makes my sole living and income from farming. My background, the farm background which I operate, is a 550-acre family farm founded in 1961 by my father and mother. We farm a lot of various, especially seed crops and vegetables for NORPAC Foods. The issue of GMO and other issues pertaining to seed production and seed source purchase is relevant to our heart and very important to our business. There locally in Benton County, we are kind of in the middle of some discussions pertaining to different types of production of crops and possible local legislation, just which would be exactly the situation that Senate Bill 633 would help to prevent. And the reason it's important that 633 is in place is, from my perspective, my farm has produced sugar beet seed for West Coast Sugar Beet Seed Company for nearly 50 years. And in this case, we are talking about a GMO issue, but that is just the relevant issue at this current time. It'll be something else, like whether it's organic or non-organic. It'll be other issues in the future. But this issue with regards to sugar beet seed is that the sugar beets that we produce are roughly 30 to 40 acres or 30 to 50 acres, comprising about 12 to 15% of my gross income on the farm, which equates to about 20% of our net income. The loss of that potential crop would cause me to reduce my net income by 10% with the same costs relevant to production, approximately $30,000 a year to me as on our farm operation. Our operation, as a family small business, this would be a unnecessary burden. I would acknowledge that federal and state authorities have already reviewed this issue, and I think that these issues are complex and convoluted, and as many of the previous speakers have indicated, would best be served at the state and federal level to get a mess created by having many local laws and rules would be very complicated to manage and would create an unnecessary burden to farmers in my situation. So therefore, I see Senate Bill 633 as providing assurance for science-based decisions. It prevents fear-based rulemaking. It protects family farms and the ag industry from the goals of radical special interest groups. So I please ask you to support 633 and move it forward. I respectfully submit this testimony. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, committee members, I'm Robert Krause, a third-generation farmer from Grants Pass. I urge you to support and pass Senate Bill 633. I currently farm about 500 acres in Josephine County. We're growing corn silage, both for conventional farming, and we also grow organic corn silage. We are growing, a lot of our conventional corn is GE corn, which seems to be an issue. It allows us to do the no-till farming, best management practices. We also grow garlic for seed. We're growing alfalfa and grass for hay. We're raising sweet corn and a variety of vegetables that are marketed at a local farm stand. And we also operate an agritainment side of our business with a corn maze and pumpkin patch in the fall. We manage the issue of cross-pollination by having conventional and organic side by side, simply by the timing of pollination. These are not issues that are hard to do. The seed industry up here does it now with distance and timing of when they pollinate. To allow local regulation would put us at a disadvantage to other farmers in the state and other counties in the state, and also to other states. So with this in mind, I would urge you to pass Senate Bill 633.
Any questions for this panel?
Comment. I'll just reinforce, Bob Krause is my neighbor, and I haven't heard any issues in our community about GE or GMO or any of this stuff, and we farm side by side, and I haven't heard anything.
So good.
We must be doing something right.
Again, I appreciate you coming all this way, and I thank you for your testimony.
Thank you very much for your time.
So next we're going to have Brian Combs, Sunny Lindley, Lynn E., and Tanisa Rampa. Wow. Hope I got those right.
Tanasi,
thank you.
Robert. I'm Brian Combs.
Okay, yes. All right.
You ready?
We are ready. Whoever wants to go first.
I'm Brian Combs. I live in Ashland, Oregon.
Appreciate the chance to be here. I'm also the chief petitioner for Measure 15-119, which qualified on the Jackson County ballot for May 2014. We submitted nearly 7,000 signatures, almost double what we're required to do. It's a hot issue in the county. Couple things. Jackson County is special, like Senator Bates said. It's a brand we market. Here's the Ashland Chamber of Commerce book that they put out, and they're not exactly a specialist radical group, all right? And they say top 10 reasons why people live in Ashland. Number two, common values that support sustainable green practices and organic farming. Number four, great restaurants, artisan foods, wines, and organic produce. This is a brand we're trying to protect. It's remarkable that even Syngenta, the one of the culprits, is their CEO is challenged. Well, what's up? There's a GMO ban in Switzerland. What's with that? He says, well, if tourism and food are important, it might be appropriate, like in Switzerland. That's a quote from the CEO of Syngenta. Interesting point of view. We think that food and tourism are important to our area. Our position is that SB 6C3 is a bit of a solution with no problem, okay? There is no hodgepodge of regulations everywhere, okay? But there are precedents for local county ordinances controlling agriculture. Umatilla County regulates its apple growers. Jackson County regulates its pear orchards with local ordinances. This is just one more way to deal with what we consider to be a local problem. And now, what is that problem? I'll try and be brief here. And can you hold the map up? This shows the core of Jackson County agriculture. The dark area down the diagonal is the Bear Creek watershed. Edge to edge, peak to peak, it's 8 miles across. Okay? What we've done here is on the green, the green dots represent organic farmers with a 4 mile buffer around each of their farms, all right? Syngenta, prior to July of last year, was growing sugar beets under USDA regulations and a permit, and one of those permit requirements was to stay 4 miles away from other farmers, make due diligence to do that. You can see here just the circles on 4 mile boundaries around just 12 organic farmers covers the whole valley. Now those orange dots are where Syngenta chose to plant, all right? They don't care about these regulations, and you know, they've caused a lot of problems. Now, Mr. DiLorenzo talked about it's going to cost money. All right. Well, what about the economic loss if we destroy organic agriculture in Jackson County? Oregon State University suggested that agriculture in the county is an $80 million enterprise. If you apply multipliers to that to other jobs and restaurants and stuff, it's a factor of five. We're looking at $4 million worth of value. I would point out that Marin County, who banned GMOs 8 years ago, saw their number of organic producers double in those 7 years, and the value of that produce go up by a factor of seven times, okay? So think about that hitting Jackson County trying to protect itself. So there's a problem, but what do you do about it? Okay, when GMO farmer A puts organic farmer B out of business or threatens their business, all right, we don't think that's reasonable and prudent as defined by Oregon right to farm. I'd like to have a judge tell me what's reasonable and prudent about your neighbor putting out a bet in 30 seconds. Okay, we went to the feds, nothing happened. We went to the state, nothing happened. We went to the county, nothing happened. Our response was Measure 15-119, okay? It's the way to do it. It's democracy. That's what we're made of. Please vote no on 633. Thank you.
Thank you. And generally in our hearings, we don't do a lot of clapping either side, so I'll encourage that. So thank you. I know. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'm Sunny Lindley, an organic urban micro farmer and a mother of five hungry growing boys. I'm deeply concerned about the purity and diversity of the local food supply. SB 633 is a power grab for Syngenta Corporation, a Swiss company, to have uninhibited reign over the food and seed supply in Oregon.
We don't need a cookie-cutter food supply, sure to arise from corporate control to degrade the diverse, healthy fare that Oregon families are demanding at an ever-increasing rate. What gives Oregon its character in the food economy is the diversity of offerings from organic wine and beer to the heirloom fruit and vegetables found at farmers markets and restaurants. If counties lose their ability to regulate organic safe zones, the consequences will be irreversible. GE open-pollinated crops are already planted in areas of the Rogue Valley, threatening to contaminate our organic food supply. My five children deserve to have a choice whether to be eating GE foods in their future. Passing SB 633 will be a step in the direction of eliminating that choice, as counties will not be able to create organic safe zones to protect our remaining pure seed and food crops. As a mother of five sons who I'm raising to do well and also to do good, I'm concerned that taking control of agricultural products from counties will inhibit job growth in the fastest growing consumer food sector, the organic food industry. I want to make sure that my five boys have employment that they can find in the Rogue Valley where they can do good as well as doing well. Jackson County's unemployment rate is 11.6%. Our neighboring county, Josephine County's unemployment rate is 13.2%. According to the USDA, organic farming has been one of the fastest growing segments of U.S. agriculture for over a decade. According to the Organic Trade Association's Families, Organic Attitudes and Beliefs study, 78% of families, even in our depressed economy, say they're choosing organic foods. Numerous businesses and cultural centers in Oregon, as Brian mentioned, such as the Shakespeare Festival, attract tourism that rests on a culture that features organic cuisine. Organic agriculture is a value written into city charters, as Brian showed you. Oregon had 155,613,000 total organic agriculture sales in 2008 and has shown an 18% increase annually. It's a booming, booming market and economy in the Rogue Valley. Amy's Organics in White City, Oregon indicated that if our region can supply them with the organic non-GMO corn and other produce, that they will buy it, representing a tremendous opportunity for jobs in our county's organic industry, which would really help the unemployment rate in the Rogue Valley. If SB 633 passes, organic standards on which the expected rapid growth of the organic industry depends will be threatened, thus threatening new job opportunities in Jackson County. National organic regulations include prohibition of genetically modified organisms in organic production. SB 633 will not allow organic farmers to protect their crops and land from contamination due to open-pollinating GE crops, which are already planted in our region. SB 633 will result in an assault on the thriving organic industry that is a beacon of hope in rural counties. Please vote no on SB 633 and let the people in Oregon counties make our own choices about our food economy. Thank you for the opportunity to share.
Thank you.
Greetings, Mr. Chair. My name is Tanasi Rama. I am an environmental engineer and environmental toxicology and a business owner. I have an engineering firm in Ashland employing 11 people. As well, I'm an organic farmer. And I'm here to talk to you about guarding a way of life and protecting a culture in Southern Oregon. I came to Southern Oregon in 2005 and was drawn to this area because of the organic nature of the agriculture there and the people that I met in this area. And since I've brought a lot of my tribe and a lot of my people to this area, the distinction that Senator Buckley made between hybridization and genetically modified foods is really important. I want to really appreciate him bringing that in. There's also a lot of misconception about the paperwork and things that are done on the federal level. They say that there's been a lot of testing and everything for the genetically modified crops, but in reality, a lot of our federal government has already been persuaded by these large biotech companies. And they've taken roles and positions in the FDA and the USDA. And so a lot of the documentation and testing that has proven that, and I know this because I did a lot of this testing in graduate school, that the organochlorines, the different chemicals, the organophosphates that are used in Roundup and these pesticides for the GE foods are very damaging, and they continue through the food chain. They get into the wildlife. They get into the pregnant mothers, and a lot of the diseases that are being on the rise all throughout our country right now are a result from this genetically modified foods. So I want to really just bring that to light, that there's a large growing population of people that are in total support of organic agriculture for health. And in Jackson County, we have this organic agriculture that totally defines us. When you fly into to Medford Airport, there's pictures on the wall of people or farming in a very natural way. One of the things with genetically modified farming tactics is that they encourage the use of pesticides and chemicals that are more and more strong, because they have to continually come up with new ways to combat the new types of super weeds that are being formed. And so it becomes more and more dangerous and more of a contaminant for the people that are applying those things. I lived for 7 years in Costa Rica and ran an organic farm and healing center there. Had to work with many of the people that came off of the pineapple fields because they were spraying pesticides and toxins, and they came in with cancer and all types of different things. I don't want to see that same type of transformation happen in Southern Oregon. I really appreciate the beautiful natural setting and the organic agriculture that's there, and I'd like to promote that, and I'd ask you this to oppose Proposition 633. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for this panel? Yes, Senator Pazansky.
One question regarding the map that she showed us. She showed us the orange dots where they had already planted. My understanding from what if I understood your testimony, is that they were told that they were not supposed to be within 4 miles of established organic farms?
No, other seed growers. I'm not a USDA regulations expert. When we went to Avis and asked them what's going on here, they said they have a permit to grow in your county. All right, so can you tell us where? No. I said, well, what's the requirements? They're supposed to keep 4 miles away from other farmers who might be growing seeds. Because, one, these are under permit. They were not released for general production.
I appreciate
yet.
That. So my other question, since we've got a lot of other people want to speak, have you taken that issue to whoever issued them the permit?
Yes.
And what was their response?
Well, they sent an investigator out. They took 8 affidavits, and we said, what's going to come of this? You'll never know.
When was that?
It was last May, March. Last June.
Yeah. Could you provide the committee with paperwork of what where that went so we would just know?
Well, okay, we made phone calls. We never filed a formal complaint, but we made enough noise on the phone. Gary Brown of Avis arranged for a BRS investigator to come on site and take affidavits from about 8 organic farmers. But again, what comes of this? It's secret. It's not disclosable. It's confidential. You'll never know the answer. And in fact, our investigator told us, FOIA, Freedom Information Act, wouldn't even get you the results. And there's no compensation either. I mean, if a farmer's damaged, so. APHIS does not care about economic impacts. All they care about is whether it's a plant pest to the surrounding plants. Pest, not economic threat.
Senator Baxter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Combs, you said the Jackson County regulates the pears, the orchards?
Yes.
And in what way?
Well, they have a law. If you abandon your pear orchard, okay, and it's a disease source where it can spread to your neighbor's farm and affect it, all right, it's Jackson County Code Section 630. It's called a pear abatement, something like that. And it involves the state. In fact, we copied 99% of that law in crafting ours. It says the county, once they discover there's damaged pear trees, has the right to come on your property with a hearing, okay, and remove the materials and send you the bill. That's exactly what our bill says. The only difference is instead of damaged pear trees, it says you plant GMO crops, you got to take them out within a year.
What department in the county would do that?
It's their county. They don't have an ag department. It's their accounting hearing officer has the hearings. Generally, I believe it's left up to the sheriff to do it. I have to say it's not enforced much. You know, there's the Farm Bureau doesn't fight it. Who wants to go to bat for diseased pear archers, right? I mean, it's there. But it's precedent for a law of that type. And our law, I mean, you did them side by side in a word check, you'd find out it probably have six pages of our law, 6.7 pages of it are copied right from that same ordinance.
Okay, and
follow up.
Has there been
You can go back away from the mic. It's really.
Oh, I'm too loud?
It's really sensitive. It causes it to mumble over there.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No problem. You're good.
I'm used to in the Ashton Chamber of Commerce, you have to like swallow it.
Yeah, I know. I have the same. I've been in the same kind of mics, so yes.
So has there been anybody in the organic, anybody that has an organic farming operation has been hurt by any of this yet?
Well, it
has been documented.
Documented, okay. Well, we have some farmers. One you're going to read here, Chuck Burr. We're going to probably read his letter. Okay, over $25,000 worth of lucrative organic seed crops have been plowed under because Syngenta's planted too close to them. As well as, for example, Abbey Lane, you're going to hear from them. They've been there for 15 years. They grow their own organic seeds. They're certified organic Oregon tilth. And Syngenta's less than an eighth of a mile on both sides of them, okay? And they now don't grow chard and beet seeds to save anymore because they don't want to lose their certification. Now, does that relate to a dollar? No, but it's a chilling effect on organic. This is the kind of thing that's happening down here. All right, it's just, you know, people want something to do about it, and we finally decided to act on our own.
Has the Department of Agriculture weighed in on this at all?
We talked to Dan Hilborn at ODA and said, Dan, what can you do to help us out? He goes, well, you know, ODA doesn't get proactive on this stuff. If you can get all your farmers down there to agree on a control area like Umatilla, you know, apples, organic apples and conventional apples, they step on each other if the practices aren't right. Though both sides of that got together and agreed they should have the Umatilla ordinance so you guys can do something like that, we'll help you set it up. But if you can't agree, there's no consensus down there, and I doubt we're going to get consensus, then Dan Hilborn made it real clear, sorry, can't help you. We did go to the state and asked them for that, and they came back with, well, you can't agree on it, not much we can do. And if you try and bring up the OSU Extension office there in Hanley Road, Phil Van Guskirk, he says, look, I don't want to hear about GMOs in this place. It's too controversial. Take it somewhere else.
So we did.
Further questions?
I'd love to ask one question. Has he read a seed contract? Have you read a GMO seed contract? I would suggest anybody who's interested should read it and see a GMO seed contract, because you give Monsanto the right to enter your property and inspect your books forever. All right, it's not this year; it's a forever contract, and they give them right to investigate your property forever. And a lot of conservatives don't think that's a good idea. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all. Thank you. So our next group will be Mike MacArthur, Tom McCoy, and Will Tucker.
Good afternoon, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. I'm Mike MacArthur, Executive Director of the Association of Oregon Counties. However, previously I was operated a small-time gambling operation, otherwise known as a dry land wheat farm in Sherman County. And while there, I was privileged as a leader in the Wheat League to tour the Monsanto laboratories in St. Louis and learn about how genetically modification takes place and learn what an incredibly complex process that is. Meanwhile, we have this bill before to regulate this particular issue, and the counties took this up as a board yesterday. Our legislative committee voted without dissension to support Senate Bill 633. We feel that this is a regulatory process that needs to be at the state or federal level. Counties don't have the resources or ability to do this. And I have a couple of county commissioners here that can elaborate.
whichever one.
Okay.
It's good. We'll save the, what did Johnson call?
No.
I'll save it.
Last time, but not today, sir.
Okay.
Thank you, Chairman Roblin. My name's Tom McCoy, and I'm a wheat and barley grower from Sherman County and a county, a Sherman County commissioner. I'll let my experienced colleague clean up for me because I've only been a commissioner for a month, so. But it's a very interesting job. I urge you to support Senate Bill 633. Basically, I want to make 2 points. First, that enforcing a ban on GMO wheat would be very expensive for our county. And the second thing is that once GMO wheat's released, growers will need a new system of tolerances even to be able to sell non-GMO wheat. In other words, if a county banned GMO wheat, their growers couldn't sell non-GMO wheat without a new system of federal regulations, and those regulations couldn't be done at a county level. So let me explain that briefly. The big problem with enforcing a ban on GMO wheat is GMO wheat, or really any other crop, looks the same as non-GMO. So you can't visually tell it. You can't go out and look and see if it's being planted. You have to take samples in the field and then send them either to your own genetic testing laboratory or a contract with an outside laboratory to do that. So, and that would be very expensive to the county, because they say you'd have to do it quite extensive sampling. Another way possibly would be to check the records of seed suppliers, but seed suppliers are often located in other counties and even other states, so doing that would also be an administrative nightmare. So I think that from the county point of view, I think it's pretty much unanimous that we don't want that obligation. Let me talk just briefly about marketing non-GMO wheat. No GMO wheat is grown in the United States right now, so that kind of takes us, we don't have a problem right now. But I believe within the next 10 years, GMO wheat will be introduced. It's likely to have a whole lot of advantages as far as reducing pesticide use, erosion. It's going to be probably more nutritious. But when I was chairman of the Oregon Wheat Commission last year, we weren't talking about the advantages of GMO. What we were talking about is trying to protect our export markets when it's introduced. Basically, our customers are all overseas.
You can push the microphone just away, so sure, you don't need to be that close. You can sit back and relax.
Thank you.
Okay.
As you know, almost all of Oregon wheat is exported mostly to Asia, and the Japanese and some of our other major customers told us they don't want GMO wheat. So to protect our export markets, we have to have a way to be able to export non-GMO cargoes to our good customers. And the problem we have is that the transportation system used to transport a wheat out of the Port of Portland is also used by many other crops. Many of them are GMO. I mean, corn, soybeans are the biggest crops exported from the Port of Portland, and they all contain GMO material. And even if a ship is very is cleaned as much as possible, there's still going to be contamination of GMO material in the cargo. And so basically, if they test a crop of wheat, they're going to always find a very, very small amount of genetic GMO material. That hasn't been a problem for us because the United States government has been able to issue a letter to these countries and tell them that there is no GMO wheat, so this must be something else, and so they are willing to look the other way. As soon as GMO wheat is released, we're going to be subject to these tests. And what we have to have is a federal system of tolerances set up so that a very small amount of GMO material in our cargoes won't cause the cargo to be rejected. But that hasn't been set up yet, and we need that has to be a federal system. It can't be a local system. We have the odd situation, as I said, that if a county banned GMO wheat, their growers could not get the benefit of selling non-GMO wheat because there would be currently traces of GMO wheat, and if it was transported at any distance, and as I say, our markets are all overseas, that would contaminate it. So it isn't a workable situation, and I urge you to support Senate Bill 633.
Thank you very much.
Chair Roblin and committee members, I'm Will Tucker, Linn County Commissioner. And as I read Senate Bill 633 and as I read the Jackson County initiative, I see it boiling down to two issues. one, giving the farmers the right to farm and some assurance about their future so they can plan their futures and understand what is out there and before them. And second, if additional control is needed beyond the USDA and FDA, who should that be? Should it be a county-by-county decision? Should it be state? Should it be federal? It's strange for a Republican to be talking about local control and being on the opposite side where I'm saying I don't want to take over planning or don't want to take over, because I would be saying I want to take over planning. I want to take over some issues. But this is one where I don't have the expertise. As I read the initiative that's down there, they have their code enforcement officer, the same man that knocks on your door about your shed and building permits, your code enforcement officer making the decision about what is genetically modified and what is not. Genetically modified products is a continuation of hybriding. Farmers have been doing that since man began farming. We have a scientific way to look at and test and now modify and produce products that make it so that products can be planted with using less water, less insecticide, and less herbicides. To me, that's a logical next step. Yes, some controls need to be put in place. Yes, organic farmers need to be protected. But asking a county to develop that expertise, to have that expertise, is one that I don't see Linn County as possibly developing and having a budget to withstand. Senator Bates talked about the state of Oregon not having the budget to withstand. I can tell you Linn County could not test, pay for the testing, pay for the inspecting, pay for the lawsuits that I look at that's out there. What I've read in this proposed ordinance is that planting GMO crops is not a reasonable and prudent farming practice. I wonder about that. Back to my first point, farming practices need to be something they can count on to plan their futures. Today, 86% of all corn produced is GMO. 93% of all soy is GMO. If you were to ask a county to start testing to figure out which is which, where is what, and then it calls for, if we can't force the farmer to plow his crop under, that the county has to plow it under and then go after that individual, I worry about the precedent that this initiative brings, the step that we're taking to a county to be in control of something they cannot be in control of. I urge you to vote against Senate Bill 633. I'm sorry, vote for Senate Bill 633.
Any questions for this panel?
We'll take.
No, I'm sorry. That's okay. Thank you very much. And while the next group is coming up, Chris Hardy, Christina Lefevre, and Garrett Benricci. I'm not sure how to spell that one. And just so people know, if they didn't know, the two amendments that they've talked about are over on the table if people want copies of them, number one and number two. So. Okay. Thank you. And whoever wants to go first, be my guest, and just to make sure you announce yourself.
Go first. We'll go left to right.
Okay. Good afternoon. Thank you for having us here and taking the time. My name is Christina Lefevre from Ashland, Oregon, and I'm reading the letter from Chuck Burr, a farmer, Restoration Seeds. Brian referenced earlier the farmer who lost over $25,000 worth of seeds. This is his letter. Dear State Senators, thank you for the hard work you do on behalf of the citizens of the great state of Oregon. My name is Chuck Burr. I am founder of Restoration Seeds Company in Ashland, Oregon. I apologize that I'm not able to be with you today. We are working hard to get 205 different seed crop varieties in the ground for 2013. We sell organic vegetable seeds nationally to home gardeners and family farmers. We are members of the Oregon Farm Bureau. I worked for President Reagan, and no one believes more in private property rights than I do. However, I'm writing to briefly explain why, instead of protecting Oregon's seed industry, SB 633 will cause our seed company substantial financial harm in the long run. The great state of Oregon is very diverse geographically, ranging from high arid plains, low alpine coastal rainforest, wide and narrow valleys. For the most part, agriculturally, our state is not broad and open like the Midwestern United States or the Imperial Valley of California. We have one noted exception in a rich agricultural valley called the Willamette, unique in the world for her friendly agricultural climate and broad size. However, our organic seed company in the Rogue Valley of Southern Oregon, it's in the Rogue Valley of Southern Oregon, our valleys are narrow, and we have daily prevailing winds which make the transfer of pollen inevitable. As a nation, the United States is strong because of our diversity. The large agricultural valleys like the Willamette and Imperial, plus the Midwestern states, are the ideal homes of modern agriculture. We need them to feed the nation and the world. These are enormous areas of millions of acres available to grow crops and their seed stocks. However, we need the narrow valleys that cannot support large farms for their entrepreneurial small family farmers to maintain agricultural genetic diversity and to breed the new crops of our future. To breed these new crops and maintain heritage lines, it is a law of physics that we must have isolation from the broad-scale crop pollen sources. It's just physics. The two models of broad-scale production and small-scale diversity are absolutely essential to our state's and nation's future. If we bring in an heirloom vegetable seed crop into a major agricultural seed-growing area, we will contaminate thousands of acres worth of seed stock. If we do the reverse and bring a broad-scale crop into a narrow organic breeding valley, we will contaminate a crop that the nation's home gardeners rely on. This recently happened to our seed company. We had to destroy 2 years' worth of major seed crop, that was the charred seed that Brian mentioned, $25,000 worth, because of contamination from an industrial seed crop. We just need to keep the two systems separate. Parts of the Oregon and the nation need to be able to grow highly diverse organic seed crops and others broad-scale seed crops. Remember, too, that large seed companies are highly mobile and can grow seed anywhere in the country or world, for that matter. The point is that the seed grown in the broad valleys are different customers than in the narrow valleys. The Rogue Valley is the home of seed growers for every major garden seed packet company in the country and only one broad-scale seed company. The 99% in the Rogue Valley is the 1% in the Willamette. So anyway, our seed company grows 200 different crops a year in the Rogue Valley. So we are just asking you to please vote no on SB 633. Thank you for your time, Senators.
Thank you. And I think he may have sent that in as well.
Okay, I did.
I'm not sure. So if you give us a copy, we can make sure everybody gets a copy of that too. Thank you. Okay.
Thanks. Hi, my name is Garrett Furuichi, and my wife and I run a small bakery in Ashland. So I appreciate you hearing our testimony today, because I think it's very important for you to hear what the impact of your decision will have on us, on small businesses in the Rogue Valley. We support our local farmers. We support diversity in the community, and part of our role is providing great products to our customers. We see that at risk with the loss of organic produce and products in the Rogue Valley. The diversity question is really critical to me. I've read about the problem with genetically modified crops and transgenic species occurring, and that just happened and was reported on a grass seed that was in the Willamette Valley not too long ago. That means that if it can cross-pollinate other organic material, we will lose heritage seeds and we'll lose diversity and we'll lose a section of the economy that is really crucial. We are branded in Ashland as a entertainment center, as a local food center, and we value that and we don't want to put that at risk. We're asking you to consider the local ordinance as the appropriate place to manage and control a local issue, and that the idea that we've been hearing about on some of the other testimony that I kind of like to point to also indicates that
we have a responsibility and a due diligence to protect the local economy, local diversity. The risk that I see in hearing from this other testimony about export and the value of organic export to Japan really says that we have to protect our growers, our organic producers, and the diversity within our community. I really am worried about the sheer cost of eradication of something if it were to go wrong, and the sheer impact on tourism if we do not have any organic material, organic products in our local market. We will lose that tourism sector. So I'll take any questions, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you. We'll do all three first, then we'll do the questions.
Thank you, Chairman Robin. Thank you, Senate Committee. My name is Chris Hardy. I'm a farmer in Jackson County. I serve on the board of directors of the Rogue Valley Growers and Crafters Market, as I have for over 3 years. I'm also chief petitioner on the GMO Free Jackson County initiative that is presently before Jackson County voters in May 2014. As well, have traveled to more than 50 countries and visited farming communities in a very broad, different forms of agriculture. And our farm presently produces chard seed. We have over 50 different varieties of herbs and vegetables on our farm, and we produce beta seed, which is the beet family seed, which is directly in harm's way through GMO contamination from the Roundup Ready sugar beet that is presently being grown in Jackson County. We understand that our farm, it's important to understand that our farm grows grows seed for crop because we believe that it's the right thing to do for our farming system. This is what organic, the foundation of organic seed is, unlike that of genetically engineering crops, which are produced, these seeds are produced in the laboratory. Our farm produces these seeds on our farm to be adapted to the soil type and to the environmental conditions, the local growing conditions that we have in our growing area. Purity of seed is really vitally important to our business. We produce seeds for contract for seed companies in the United States. We produce seeds for local markets. We also produce seeds for our own farm, and this is vitally important that we maintain purity of this seed, because the vegetative crop that comes off this seed is it is vitally important, because our customers know us to have that available to them for our markets. Our markets do involve the Rogue Valley Growers and Crafters Market, as well as direct relationships with our customers. The Rogue Valley does have a very different geographical layout than say the Willamette Valley, which has a wide expanse of area. Class one, class two soils, they come right down to the potential of maybe a 3 or a 4 or 5 mile distance across the valley. So it makes what USDA had required during the time of regulation for the beta crops, for the beet crops, that a 4 mile isolation would be indeed very challenging for our Rogue Valley in southern Oregon. It's also important to understand that we must protect the livelihoods of our small farmers. The Rogue Valley's industry for organics right now is growing at an unprecedented level, as I have personally seen with the at the Rogue Valley Growers and Crafters Market through the numbers of people who are applying for entry into our market. As far as the economic impact, our farm grows seed in southern Oregon and needs to maintain this purity, and it is vitally important that you oppose House Bill, Senate Bill 633 for this reason. And I would just like to close by sharing a conversation that I had with the CEO of the Grange Co-op, who's one of the largest retailers of farm products in southern Oregon, that indeed organic agriculture is growing at a very rapid level, and they are very excited about the vision for a GMO-free or an organic Rogue Valley. Please vote no on Senate Bill 633. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Okay. Thank you very much. Our next panel, Jerry Marquette, Bill Hoyt, and Linda Kirsch.
Jerry.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jerry Margath. I'm a farmer in the southern Willamette Valley. My wife and I produce crops on about 2,500 acres that are almost equally divided on the Lane and Benton County line. We strongly support the passage of Senate Bill 633. We believe that decisions concerning agriculture are best left to the state, or in some cases the federal government, and to ensure consistency across larger geographic regions, rather than a patchwork of various conflicting rules generated at the county or municipal level. Modern agriculture faces a great many challenges, and to a degree, those challenges have inhibited younger people from entering into that as a career. One of the things that we can do to address those challenges is not to make it over complex regulatory environment to keep them interested in farming as a career. Today's farmer probably should have a full-time compliance officer on staff to attend to all of the rules and regulations imposed by at the state and federal level, adding another layer of regulation to that scenario doesn't make it any better. If the projections of world population exceeding 9 billion by 2050 prove out, then I find it fairly easy to say that we're going to need every tool that we've got at our disposal to feed that population. We have the luxury in this country to enjoy the safest, most abundant, and most affordable food on the face of the planet. And we didn't get here by accident. Science and technology have always helped us to be very good producers of food and fiber. But even with those tools, we need a regulatory environment that allows each farmer to rise to their true potential. Senate Bill 633 would help to protect that environment for future farmers. I mentioned earlier that we farm across county lines. I can't even begin to imagine the operational environment we would be in if we had different rules on each side of that county line. I can't imagine that it might be too costly for us to continue farming if we were those rules were imposed. Oregon's farm community has had a long-standing tradition of working together to resolve issues, and I think that some of these regional issues can be resolved in venues other than a patchwork of different regulations across the 36 counties. And thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Brenda Kirsch, and I'm a farmer in St. Paul. I'm a third-generation farmer, and I've been back on our family's farm for about 7 years now, farming with my family. We grow perennial ryegrass, hazelnuts, vegetables, wheat, and clover, and we farm about 1,000 acres. I'm here today in great support for Senate Bill 633. If this bill passes, it will allow me as a young farmer to really see a secure future for me in Oregon as a farmer. if we begin to have local government regulations, I think it would very quickly create a nightmare for me as a producer and for me to continue on this legacy that my father passed on to me and my grandfather as well. I can't imagine being regulated on what I can grow in one county versus another county. excuse me. We farm on the border of three towns, but I can throw a rock and hit another county, and my pollen, like you mentioned before, does not stop at the county line. It would be not only a logistical disaster for me as a farmer, but also for manufacturers and distributors as well. But beyond that, over 400 local city governments in 36 different counties, they're not set up to have the financial backing or the research ability that the federal government, the EPA, the USDA, all has. You know, and we also have the ODA, which can take care of a lot of the state issues that we have facing us and really do their due diligence and do the research that would not be able to be done at the county level. This is a very complex issue, and it's an ever-growing issue. In a recent survey done by the American Farm Bureau Young Farmers and Ranchers, it was shown that the second highest concern for young farmers coming back and being sustainable farmers was red tape and regulations. For me, when I filled out this survey, it was the number one thing, because I knew something like this could be coming down the pipeline for me as a farmer in Oregon. My family's here to stay. Obviously, we've been here for over 65 years, and we've been in the dirt, and we've worked the same ground for that long, and we've been productive, and we've been successful. But I think bills like 633 are an extremely positive move toward the future. I think it's if it were to pass, it would make me feel a lot more secure about my family's legacy and our next generation of farmers coming to be. I think that this is one way that legislatively we can be proactive and show that we support Oregon agriculture. I urge you to please pass this bill and don't cut the legs out from federal agencies and state agencies that already are doing their due diligence and putting the money forth to address this issue. Thank you.
Thank you.
For the record, Senator Roblin, committee members, my name is Bill Hoyt. I'm the legislative chair for the Oregon Cattlemen's Association, immediate past president. I'm not a farmer per se. I raise 300 mother cows and a bunch of sheep, and don't tell anyone, please. Mm-hmm. I raise the crops which support them. But I'm asked to speak all over the state on cattle-related and livestock-related issues. And one of the things that I get asked all the time is, where are we in terms of organic food or practices which people think all livestock has antibiotics and filled with all hormones and all sorts of other things. And I say, you know, it's important that we support local farms. I'm absolutely in favor of local farm. My family's been in business since 1860 or 1852. This is 160 years, five generations on the same place. But we need to make sure that there is, that as we go forward, that we don't make too much local control. I'm in two counties. I would never have an ability to be able to live with ordinances in both counties at the same time. And so we also have to understand that food production in the United States, we have 300 plus million people to feed in this country. In 1956, there was the same number of cows in the United States as there are today. And yet that same number of cows is producing twice as many pounds of beef in the United States today as it did in 1956. And that is a perfect example of the fact that U.S. agriculture has risen to the occasion of producing what needed to be produced, so that now we're more efficient, and that means technology. If people had access to technology in the 1800s, they would have used it. And technology, we have grown with it, and we will continue to do so. And it will make us more productive, and we will continue to be the most productive, safest, cheapest food supply in the world. And I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for this panel? Senator Barker.
Bill, did I hear you correctly? You got sheep on the place?
Senator, I have goats as well. Please don't tell anyone. They're organic weed control.
Okay, our next panel, Shannon Harris, Katie I think it's Farrell, and Anna Cassley. I hope I'm doing some justice to some of these names. And you can do whatever order you want, and there's a couple of us that are going to have to leave to another meeting, and I know that Senator Batchelor will take over. The testimony will be recorded, and we'll all get it, so you're okay, but we'll be here for you. So.
Okay. Chairman Roblin and members of the committee, thank you for letting us testify today. For the record, my name is Shannon Harris. I'm a gardener and a seed saver, and I am here to represent a whole bunch of local farmers who couldn't be up here today because this is the first day of our area's local farmers market. This is the first chance they get to start making back the money they've spent over the winter keeping employees on. Okay, we urge you to kill SB 633. We're working hard to keep a conversation going between our local farmers on seed issues and what is important to each and every one of them. A lot of talk has happened here about local measure 15119, and currently that is on our ballot. However, the voters can decide whether or not that bill is the right solution or not. More importantly, the issue here is whether or not SB 633 is a valid way of helping our local farmers to have a conversation around the things that affect us in our valley. Okay. At this point, we're trying to have that conversation. And taking that ability away from our local community by regulating the seed supply solely at the state level, we drove 3.5 hours to be here this morning. If we have to do that every time our farmers need to speak on a seed issue, that's a bit onerous. Okay. So we're asking, please, to allow us at the county level to work out the differences between our organic and our GMO and our conventional farmers so that we can have a workable solution. Thank you.
Thanks. My name is Katie Farrell. I wish I hadn't scaled down what I had written to you because some of the comments here today I feel need to be addressed. I did submit I was a director of a public housing authority. I was a realtor. I have been a parent and artist. I have conceived of a lot of ideas to try to address a bigger picture. So I'm going to speak to that. This seed issue to me is the debate of our time. It brings all differences of belief and opinion to common ground. Seeds represent our sovereignty and are at the core of our freedom. Seeds are the true wealth given to all the people, not just a few patent holders. Under all is the land, and that's straight from the real estate code. We need to really, really think more seriously about what we're doing. I totally champion Senator Bates' approach to health care, and that's really being looked at the federal level, because what he's trying to do on silo, you know, all these different departments, it's similar to what we're addressing by trying to keep diversity and actually introduce diversity.
Get a little ways away from them. Okay. It's too sensitive, and we can't understand what you say.
Some of the comments that were made, GMO tastes better, but the fact is it's not better. It's not better. It's significantly not better. And the cost to the soil, the water, the land, and the chemicals that are being introduced, this goes back to the miracle of agriculture that was introduced in, you know, the end of the Depression and between the Great and after the war. We had the miracle of DDT, and we were going to feed the world. And yet we knew that was polluting the environment in 1962 and Silent Spring by Rachel Carson, banned it in 1972. This trajectory continues, and scientists, you know, warn us. Even the FDA has concerns about GMOs with only 3 months of study, but they were overruled. And there's such a lag in the trend. So I see the trajectory of the markets going to GMO. I think that the solution really is don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Make everything in the state of Oregon organic and GMO free, and don't bypass all of this complication, because that's what the consumer wants. That's what countries are doing. They even have the good sense in Haiti to throw away the genetically modified seeds because they know that it's going to destroy their agriculture. I have a lot to say. This is affecting the salmon. This is affecting just about everything you can think of. And it's kind of sad because we even talk in Jackson County and the economics, where a farmer who's growing in a new trend can't really even afford to harvest seed to have it tested. That's how desperate we are. We need value-added help. We need so much help in Southern Oregon. Through the Chamber of Commons, we are trying to champion the commons. I think our region should be a region of resource. Okay, keep that water and air. Every fifth person I talk to about this issue, oh yeah, we just moved here. Oh, why? The water's it's clean. The air, the food. My health demands that I move from such and such a place. I was so sick there. There's so many reasons why doing the study, and I included a list of lots and lots of resources on the big picture and the forward thinking. If you can see this movie fresh, and I can get I'll send a copy to you. Watch that one film. It talks about four different farmers who have been the old school using the chemical industrial type of farming, and now they're transitioning. So let's get ahead of the curve this time, not mix it up with this and that.
Thank you.
Yeah, Chairman Roblin and members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity. My name is Anna Cassidy. I'd like to begin just clarifying one point I've heard. 15119 doesn't require expertise to enforce. There is a GMO contract when you're farming with GMOs. The contract is the evidence. And this would be the same for home gardeners, too, although I have to say I haven't met any home gardeners who are growing GMOs, and I'd be pretty surprised if that happened. But certainly it could. But still, they would also be under contract, and the contract would be the evidence. A little over a year ago, I became aware that there were genetically engineered sugar beets growing one street away from my house and my garden. I'm also a gardener. As a gardener, I knew that I could no longer gather my seeds, these charred seeds, to plant for next year because of potential contamination by GMO pollen and drift. To not be able to gather and save seed is a severing of an ancient and sacred process which was bestowed upon us by our Creator. I am seeking to protect this fundamental right to gather seed and grow food without fear of contamination. As a gardener, I know that diversity contributes to a healthy agriculture, a healthy economy. What if those who are concerned about the danger of GMO crops to our health and agriculture are right? What if we have put all of our eggs in the GMO basket and lost our precious heritage seeds through contamination? Shouldn't we preserve some areas as a safety measure? You can't put the genie back in the bottle. Mm-hmm. Extinction is forever. We owe this to the generations to come. The state of Oregon can provide useful guidance and information, but ultimately I believe it is in the best interest of our local economies to leave decisions about local agricultural practices to local jurisdictions. Please vote against Senate Bill 633. I also have a letter from Abbey Lane Farm, which they have asked us to read. As owners of a small organic farming system, we were shocked and alarmed to learn of Senate Bill 633. We have owned and operated an Oregon Till certified organic vegetable and fruit farm in the Rogue Valley for the past 11 years. As many organic farms do, we grow out and save a portion of our seeds to save on costs and to develop regionally adapted varieties. There are many organic growers that have concentrated their efforts on the seed-growing aspects of organic farming, as the need for certified organic seed has never been greater. Approximately 4 to 5 years ago, we discovered by chance that a neighbor's property was being leased out to grow GE sugar beets. Syngenta did not then, nor have they ever notified us of this practice. Our property was and is visibly marked as an organic farm. This GE growing ground is less than 1/8 of a mile away. The likelihood of cross-contamination with our Beta vulgaris crops, i.e. table beets and chard, is a given. Our organic certifying agency, per the policies set in place by the National Organic Program, will not allow us to save these seeds and grow out as an organic crop due to the close proximity of this GE growing ground. This brings us to our concern over Senate Bill 633. Our county, Jackson, has obtained a qualifying number of signatures to place an initiative on the ballot that will address the future of GE crops in our valley. Whether you're pro or anti-GE foods, I would ask you, why would one be in favor of taking our voting rights away? Bill 633 does exactly that. We are simply asking to obtain some semblance of control over our regional food supply and maintain economic viability of our small farms. You must not take our voice away by eliminating our ability to vote. The Oregon Farm Bureau initiated this bill. Per state records, the Oregon Farm Bureau receives 25 of its funds from Monsanto and Syngenta. Put simply, this bill is a biotech-backed piece of legislation that serves to take away the rights of Oregon counties to measure their local agriculture. We wish these to be submitted. Thank you, Tom Ponder and Glenda Ponder.
I was going to say.
Thank you.
Thank you. And if you want to leave copies of any of that would be fine, too. Any questions? For this? Yeah. Yes, Senator Berger.
Understanding the certification for organic farms, there's a process you have to go through. Mm-hmm. And I think it's 3 years. You can't use any pesticides, herbicides, and stuff like that. Do we know of anybody in Jackson County that has lost their certification because of contaminations from GMO?
I am not aware of any, but I am aware of people who were concerned about their, and so therefore destroyed their crops because they, in integrity, did not feel they could sell those crops.
Okay. Is there any way to document? I mean,
get a custom.
That's what I was saying. That we even to harvest enough seed to be tested, and the cost of doing that is even prohibitive. That's how close to the edge so many people are in Southern Oregon. Okay, it's not Portland. It's not Salem. It's really tough down there. There's no jobs, and I've been working on this issue, those issues, how to use what we have to get jobs and money to participate, even in a test of the seeds. It's very hard.
Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thanks.
We have like two panels left, and we're going to have to leave in a couple minutes, but I'll get the next one started, and then Senator Betcher will take over to make sure we get all the testimony of those people that came today. We will get a copy of the testimony and be able to get it, so rest assured before we make decisions. We will do that.
Yeah.
So, Barry Bashu, Marie Bowers, Rodney Hightower, and Doug. Oh, sorry, that's it. It's the three.
We got close.
I guess I'll go first.
Yep, thank you.
Thank you, Senate Committee, for having us here this afternoon. My name is Marie Bowers, and I'm a 27-year-old fifth-generation farmer in the Southern Willamette Valley. A little over a year ago, I chose to leave a promising career in ag finance and return to the family farm in hopes of continuing our century-long tradition. Currently, we farm Metafoam wheat and grass seed in two counties, Lynn and Lane. I'm here today in support of Senate Bill 633. Typically, I'm not in favor of bills that enact regulations on farmers. However, ultimately, this bill will result in less regulatory burden on farmers and on counties. As I mentioned, my family farms in two counties. I cannot imagine the fiasco it would create if either Lynn or Lane County decided to create their own seed policies. What would that mean for our seed transportation, our seed cleaning facility, our land values, and our marketability? What about my future? What potential county policy will allow a young farmer to succeed? Our rural counties are struggling for funds. Their first obligation should be to the basic public services and economic development, not enforcing regulations that should be done at a state level. Oregon Department of Agriculture has the resources and scientists to make sure all regions of Oregon have what they need in terms of regulations. While I'm proud to come from the grassy capital world, also known as Linn County, Oregon, I'm an Oregonian first. This bill serves and promotes all Oregonians to be successful. Thank you for your time today, and I hope you support this bill for young farmers, Oregonians, and all of our futures.
Thank you.
Chairman Roblin, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Rodney Hightower, and I'm a partner in Stonefisher Farm, located outside of Junction City. I began working on this farm in 1979 and worked into a partnership after graduating with a crop and soil science degree. Our farm grows turf grass seed, grain, and specialty seeds like garden peas, sugar beet seed, and hybrid red radishes. It is my opinion that we need Senate Bill 633 to avoid having 36 counties and hundreds of cities in Oregon, all with their own rules and regulations covering agriculture. Increasing government regulations are one of the major issues affecting farms and ranches. This issue worries most of my colleagues. For the most part, we are small businesses working on small profit margins, and increased regulations affect our profitability. Our industry is subject to many factors such as weather and market forces that we can't control. Increased regulations can be added to this. In our state, the Oregon Department of Agriculture is given the authority to regulate ag. If every county and city started putting onerous regulations on ag producers, it would get very complicated as to what crop can be grown where and by whom. In some cases, what little competitive advantages we have as producers can be lost. In these lean budget conditions, only the Department of Ag has the personnel and expertise to adequately ensure that the public continues to enjoy a safe and plentiful food supply. At the federal level, we have agencies such as USDA and EPA that regulate ag. When new pesticides or modified crops are introduced, they have been scrutinized and studied to ensure that they are safe for consumers and the environment. These new technologies cost their developers millions of dollars in scientific studies. As taxpayers and citizens, we already have agencies that are tasked with our safety and well-being. I'd like to thank Chairman Roblin and the committee for listening to our testimony today, and I strongly urge you to pass Senate Bill 633. Thank you.
Senator Roblin, members of the committee, my name is Barry Beshew. I farm up near Gresham. My wife and I farm about 40 acres. The bulk of it's on a small 17-acre piece. The two of us do most of the work. We raise a broad diversity of horticultural crops. Some of them are done conventionally. Some of them are done pesticide and fungicide-free. And we do a number of different crops, almost all directly marketed to the public through either farmers markets or on our farm itself. You know, farming's hard. It's a lot of work. We have members on our board that represent a broad I'm the president of the Oregon Farm Bureau, too. We have a number of board members on our that are wide and diverse. We have organic producers. We have GM producers. We have conventional producers, and we welcome that diversity and encourage it. I think it's a lot of work. It's hard. There's a lot of challenges, and I think it's unfortunate that this bill seems to have debased itself into a discussion about what form of production agriculture is more important than another. I don't think that our industry can afford that. It disheartens me, frankly, to hear about the things that are being said about a very bright future of an industry that does not need to divide itself. And I think this bill has provided an opportunity for folks to do that. And I think that's particularly unfortunate and particularly disheartening for me, considering the investment I've made in the industry over the years and certainly on my farm and for my family. I want to talk a little bit. I was appointed by Secretary Vilsack to be a member of the AC21 committee, which was Agriculture and Biotechnology in the 21st Century. There was about 22 people on that representing the Organic Trade Association, Organic Valley Dairies. There was a non-GM project there. There was a number of organic growers. There was also a number of conventional growers. I guess I was kind of in the middle as part of that group. It was interesting to me that after a year and a half of discussion, the secretary charged with talking about a compensation mechanism in terms of trying to compensate growers for economic loss due to inadvertent presence of GE. It was interesting that after a year and a half, none of those groups None of those groups were able to come forward with a single case of an individual farmer who had suffered economic loss due to inadvertent presence of GE. Now, I heard a couple of examples today. Why those weren't brought forward, I don't know. I don't know if they're anecdotal. I don't know. But I thought it was interesting that across a broad spectrum of national folks, there was none of this evidence available. We did discuss a lot of information about organics and the value of organics. I fully support it. In fact, my son is interested in trying to develop a small part of our farm to be an organic farm because of the margins and the profitability. Obviously, a lot more work, but there's advantages there to do that, and I fully support that. 90% of the 17 million farmers that grow GE worldwide are smallholder, resource-poor farmers in developing countries, according to the International Service for the Ag Acquisition and Agribiotech Applications. When you sign up for an, I'm sure there's people who can speak about this better than I can, but organic certification is process-based. It's not test-based, it's not productivity-based, it's process-based. No grower in the United States has ever lost their organic certification due to the inadvertent presence of GE in their crop. None. According to USDA, and I specifically asked that question because I've been asked to ask that by growers here in Oregon. So I'm a little bit confounded about some of the concerns about losing the certification or losing their crops. The way I understand it, when you sign a contract to go into certification, and I actually signed a contract with Monsanto because I wanted to see what it was like, so I read the whole contract. When you sign a contract, you have certain obligations. On an organic process-based certification, you have an obligation to protect the seed purity on your own farm. Now, it would make it a hell of a lot easier if you sat down and worked with your neighbors to do that. I think we have an opportunity here to discuss coexistence as opposed to regulation. I think this bill is absolutely critical to set the record straight. It's critical to put farmers into a position of working together. I thought it was interesting that somebody said if this bill comes forward, we won't be able to solve our own problems. I think this bill provides an opportunity for you to solve your own problems through seed associations, pinning, and all the other mechanisms that are available to us today. So thank you for your time. I urge you to support this bill.
Thank you very much. Any questions for this group? Nope. I think we have a panel or so left, and thank you for taking care of it.
Okay, so we're going to gavel down to a subcommittee since we don't have a quorum. So we will open the subcommittee from the Rural and Economic Development on public hearing of Senate Bill 633. All right, here we go. Put my glasses on, I'll be able to see. Okay, who are we here?
Ann O'Rourke.
Peter Jueglich.
German
ending. And Ivan Malewski. Is it Malewski? And I apologize if I butchered your name. They do it to me all the time. Whomever wants to go first.
Hi, I'm Ann O'Rourke, and I am not from a radical special interest group. I am an organic farm worker, and I teach gardening classes to elementary children. I can see both sides of this bill, opposed and against, and in a fantastic world, it would be great to leave the final decision to the state. However, based on their previous Oregon Department of Agriculture decisions, lifting the ban of canola in the Willamette Valley, and the fact they haven't been able to control diseases in for the pears in Jackson County, and Jackson County had to also put in their own ordinance, the 630 that was above mentioned. And it shows to me that the ODA is failing the farmers. So I cannot agree to leave the decision, final decision, to be for the state. The farmers, farming, that damages nearby crops and farms should be prohibited, and the Oregon Department of Agriculture really should. That's where the whole diligence falls on. They're dropping the ball right now. So I agree that the counties should have their own ordinances and their own rules, because right now the ODA is failing the farmers. As far as the, you mentioned the certification for organic farms, and they have not lost any certification yet, but perhaps they destroyed a lot of those crops and so forth, because once their certification is lifted, it's lifted. Under the USDA NOP rules, it would take 5 years for them to reapply to get that organic certification, and that is a lot of years to reapply. I am a big proponent of the seed to table. What we plant and what we eat, I want it to be pure and natural and not be from a chemistry lab. Right now, I urge you to vote no against Bill 633. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Bartziger, Senator Close, members of the committee. For the record, Ivan Molesky, I'm with Friends of Family Farmers based in Molalla, Oregon. We're testifying here as a farm group in opposition to Senate Bill 633. The fundamental question here is whether or not we should be preempting local communities from having the ability to control, to establish local rules regarding agricultural crops. And as we've heard numerous times, the primary intent here is to preempt efforts in a handful of counties regarding, enacting local ordinances specific to genetically modified crops. These county ordinances have emerged in the absence of any sort of state action on this issue. Specifically, this measure would preempt, this bill would preempt a measure already approved for the ballot in Jackson County. The state's had many opportunities to begin to address the issue, whether at the Department of Agriculture level, whether at the Board of Agriculture level. Even here at the legislature, there's been bills introduced on these topics in years past. Oftentimes, they do not get public hearings. So the state's had an opportunity to address these issues, and that's part of why you're seeing this level of citizen advocacy in local areas where these issues have become a real concern. And I would say specifically, GM issues are of particular concern for Oregon's substantial and fast-growing organic industry, where the contamination with GM material can mean significant financial losses. So I guess I would say that regardless of your actual position on genetically modified crops, Senate Bill 633 is simply bad policy. It presumes that local communities are incapable of making their own decisions about what is in their own best interests. It assumes that the preference among voters in the most populous counties, whether through statewide ballot initiative or legislators who live in more populous counties, are able to always decide what is best for the entire state by removing local control over what are often local issues. And I think what we've heard today is a lot of this really is a local issue. Let's let the voters of Jackson County sort it out. And at the end of the day, this bill is fundamentally anti-democratic in its attempt to preempt a measure that's legally on the ballot in Jackson County to address these issues. Now, if this bill were to establish a responsible statewide strategy and regulatory framework for GM crops that addresses the localized concerns that you've heard in the room from both sides today, we might be able to support it. But its intent is to preempt local action, even as the Oregon Department of Agriculture and legislature have in recent years done nothing to establish any statewide standards or rules. Indeed, one of the primary organizations supporting this bill has worked to stop any sort, we believe, opposes any statewide regulation of GM crops, whether through labeling or planting. So I would just close by saying that Friends of Family Farmers works on many farm policy issues, and we've developed our broader policy agenda through listening sessions with family farmers and ranchers around the state. We've had over 300 farmers and ranchers participate in those listening sessions. And one issue that has emerged in these discussions is the need for greater oversight of genetically modified crops, including the establishment of GM isolation and control areas or other restrictions to ensure the viability of specialty seed and organic crops, the reporting of GM crop use for greater transparency and accountability, and preservation of the public's right to know where their food comes from and what's in it. So again, I'll close by saying that this bill is bad public policy, particularly in light of the longstanding absence of any state action or oversight on these issues, and we urge you to oppose it. Thank you.
Questions? Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. And do we have a Mr. Doug Hoffman?
Thank you, Senators, for taking the time today to review Senate Bill 633. I'm Doug Hoffman. I'm President and CEO of Wilco and the current Vice Chair of Oregonians for Food and Shelter, and here to testify in support, obviously, of Senate Bill 633. Oregonians for Food and Shelter is in support of this bill because local counties and municipalities are not technically or financially equipped to regulate agricultural crops. This bill will allow the regulation to be done at the state and federal level where it is today, where there are economies of scale here to hire the expertise capable of doing the regulation and understanding the rules that need to happen. USDA, EPA, and the FDA currently regulate GE plants and have access to needed expertise on the issue. The cost of discovery, development, authorization of a new plant technology, one plant technology trait, introduced between 2008 and 2012, average costs $136 million to test that trait before it ever goes into a plant. And that takes 13 years to make that happen. So the discovery, it isn't a happen chance that biotechnical crops come into play. Oregon Department of Agriculture has a plant scientist expertise to determine if agricultural specific regulations are needed. Different restrictions on seed in different counties and municipalities creates a regulatory nightmare for growers, manufacturers, distributors, and local governments. Counties and cities lack the financial resources and expertise to enforce the regulations on agricultural seed, and Senate Bill 633 will relieve them of this potential issue. For Wilco and its 3,000 farmer members, family farm members, it's extremely difficult and expensive to have potential new regulations from 36 counties and over 400 cities in Oregon. Today, Wilco is in 20 different locations, primarily to the north and to the east of the Central Oregon. Excuse me, to the west of Central Oregon. We are in 15 counties throughout the Western Oregon. And if we had to deal with county by county or city by city regulations, we'd have to increase our costs. We'd have to hire additional staff just to stay up to date and to be current on the different county by county or worse yet, city by city regulations that could come down affecting our agricultural crops just as we move across the county lines. It all begins with the seed. All our food begins with seed. We desire to allow our growers to have the best and the latest seed variety options, including biotech-derived crops, as we work to feed the great citizens of Oregon, the great citizens of the United States, and quite honestly, the growing population around the world. Senators, we ask that you please support Senate Bill 633 to allow all Oregonians a voice in the production of agriculture, Oregon farm crops. Just as a slight side note, I've traveled to 9 countries around the world working with agriculture. I've been to Haiti. I've been to Mozambique. I've seen children starving to death. Quite honestly, we need the food. And Senate Bill 633 will help us keep food for the world to feed. So thank you. Any questions?
Question? Okay. Thank you very much. Is there anybody else out there that would like to testify? Okay. I'd like to thank you'd like to testify?
Yes. Okay. My name is Tamara Murphy. I'm originally from Ohio. I now reside in Southern Oregon.
Okay. Could you repeat your name for the record?
Tamara Murphy.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Have any of you ever had your crops destroyed by GMOs? Well, I have. I spent, well, let's just say strawberry popcorn isn't as sweet as sweet corn, but it's used for the purpose of flour. Well, my neighbor didn't have any money, so she just put whatever she had, and she had some of that lovely GMO corn. Well, you can imagine what happened to my strawberry popcorn. It didn't look like that anymore. It was that hard stuff that you can't even chew. And it's very sad when we have to take what nature has given us and try to make it into something that we think is better. I want to remind you that the definition of innovation is to take what works and look at the past and the future and combine them both. There's no way that we can compete in these world markets when there's European countries laughing at us. And China doesn't even want our food. I want to tell you right now, a wise man once told me, you spend the money in the supermarket and you get good, organic, wholesome food, and then the doctors don't get a hold of you and you save a whole lot of cash in the long run. I want you guys to know that whether you believe in a next world or whatever you want to call it, the Creator, I want you to vote like you think your soul goes on forever. Let's not be just a little dim light in the world. Everyone looks at us to see what to do next. Let's give them something they can be proud of. And our children, these animals, whether you know it or not, this whole state is the cradle of the earth. And what we do here affects the entire world. Let's do something good for a change. We have caused the river of divine utterance to proceed out of our throne, that the tender herbs of wisdom and understanding may spring forth from the soil of your hearts. It's not them, it's us. But some of us don't realize that we can't go on without doing what's right for this earth. And if we are so sick because we ate these terrible chemicals, and they've become part of our DNA. After 90 days, every cell in the body is reborn, except for a bone marrow cell, which lives about 2 years. Do you want it to be made of garbage, or do you want the right ingredients? Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you. One more? Okay. State your name for the record, please.
Sure. My name is Mark Toppitz, and I'm a backyard organic farm grower, and I've been doing substantial studying on GMOs because I'm also a leukemia survivor and concerned parent. You had talked about the FDA. It was one of your concerns, and the FDA is in their website on how they deal with GMOs. Basically, they have a policy that if something looks like corn, it must be corn. They do not require testing through the FDA. They accept testing from, say, companies like Monsanto, who only have to do a 90-day study on rats to pass the study. And Synergy and some of the other big companies also only have to do a 90-day study. Rats can live to be 2 to 3 years old. 90 days means you're testing on birth to a 10-year-old. On the effects of a food. They purposely don't want to give long-term studies. The long-term studies that are out there are proving that cancer, obesity, and numerous other problems, infertility, are way on the rise. And in the lab rats, none of them survived 2 years when they were on GMO products. The control group lasted over 3 years, except for one or two rats. It is an extreme issue, and we need to seriously realize that the United States is one of the worst health countries for level of health in the world for an industrialized nation. The only thing we do substantially different is GMOs. With over 80% of the corn and 90-some percent of the soy, we also have significant sugar beets in our granulated sugar. We have canola in our margarines and butters. It is a direct effect, I feel, that we should really look at a longer-term studies and be very cautious in anything that could provide substantial danger to the public and the state or the county level, or is really the only levels that can help. I would really hope you would vote against Senate Bill 633 and give locals a control to have some power over their life. Thank you.
Thank you. Question, Senator? No question? Okay. I appreciate everybody coming. I know everyone's very passionate about that, and it's obvious in their testimony. Learned a lot of good things today, and I appreciate it. I know many of you traveled very far to come here, especially down in my neck of the woods. I know exactly how long it takes to get here. I have to come every week. So I really do appreciate you taking the time. This is part of our process, and it's very important, and I thank you very much. So with that said, we're going to close the hearing, or the public session, public hearing on Senate Bill 633. And any discussion? No. With that, we will adjourn the meeting. Thank you.